Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
In January 1968, 19-year-old encyclopedia saleswoman Linda Slauson arrived on the doorstep of a family home in Portland, Oregon. She was invited in by a seemingly kind stranger, but she would never leave. While his children played above, the man of the house strangled Linda to death before severing her foot and dumping her body in a nearby river.
And then he put a foot in a freezer and would put shoes on this foot.
The depraved killer was local electrician Jerry Brudos. The 28-year-old appeared to be an upright family man, but he was keeping a dark secret very close to home.
If you can imagine a man who would capture women while his wife and his two small children are in the house, she's making dinner, and he's in the garage torturing a woman.
Brudos killed four young women in the cruelest of circumstances before defiling their bodies for his own twisted pleasure.
Brudos is intent on only one thing, his own gratification at its most extreme. And that is one of the things that makes him the most horrifying of killers.
The perverted desires of Jerry Brudos had erupted, turning him into one of the world's most evil killers. In June 1969, Jerry Brudos was given three life sentences for murder. Over a 15-month period, he abducted, raped, killed, and desecrated the bodies of four young women in Oregon. The 30-year-old could not suppress his unhealthy desire for high-heel shoes. Rod Englert is a crime scene analyst who visited Brudos's infamous kill room and spent time speaking with the sadistic killer.
I talked to him about what went through his mind. What was he thinking about prior to picking up a victim? He would drive for hours at a time, all over looking for what he had in his mind as that perfect victim walking in front of him. Because in his mind, when he saw that, it had to have something. What was it that it had to have? High heel shoes.
Portland journalist and radio talk show host Lars Larson also interviewed Brudos in prison.
All of these women who were Brudos' victims were women that all of us could imagine as wives, mothers, sisters, daughters, and they were simply disappearing like a puff of smoke. And that made it particularly terrifying for the community because they didn't know if the next day it wouldn't be a member of their family who was taken in this way.
Despite being incarcerated for over 35 years, Brudos never showed any remorse for his horrendous crimes.
The big question, Jerry, if you got out today, would you not do it again? And there was a blank stare. He just nodded like that. That's all he did. He would do it again.
There was apparently no conscience. There was apparently no remorse. Yeah, he was the personification of evil.
This killer's story begins in Webster, South Dakota. Jerome Brudos was born on the 31st of January, 1939. The second son of Henry and Eileen, young Jerry had a difficult upbringing.
Eileen, his mother, was a rather solid figure, and she really favoured his elder brother, Larry. I think that was to colour a great deal of Jerry Brudos's childhood. An unaffectionate mother, a fairly remote father. So you've got this sort of runt of a litter concept with Brudos's childhood.
And the family were quite nomadic. They moved around a lot. So Brudos didn't really get the chance to develop those stable peer relationships that are really important to becoming who we are.
It was at a young age that Brudos first discovered the fetish that would define him.
When Brudos was five, he was just allowed to go and roam about and do what he wanted to do. So he was in a junkyard one day and he came across a pair of quite elaborate, shiny, high-heeled shoes. And he would have been fascinated by them because his mother dressed very conservatively. These weren't the kind of shoes that he would have seen her wearing. So they were something quite intriguing.
And develops, well, one almost called it an excitement about them. And indeed takes them home. His mother is very, very disapproving. And indeed so disapproving, she burns them. Now, that is the genesis in my mind of what turned Jerry Brudos into a shoe fetishist. That single moment completely altered the trajectory of the rest of his life.
As the family settled in Oregon in the early 1950s, the now teenage Brudos's fascination with women's shoes took a more sinister turn.
So the obsession, which started off with shoes, then expanded to women's underwear. And he would steal women's underwear, and he would wear it, and he would play with it. And I think he starts to experience feelings of comfort and feelings of arousal. So these are things, I think, that are quite kind of confusing for him, but quite intriguing at the same time.
Brudos collected his high heels and underwear, the thefts of them, from clotheslines. Sneaking through neighborhoods, this was a challenge to him. And it's not about the sex, it's about power. What can I get away with?
Brudos's next twisted plan was to photograph a naked girl. Age 17, he lured one of his neighbors into his house and threatened her with a knife.
When she'd taken her clothes off under his orders, he took photographs of her. And I think at this point, he hadn't thought much beyond taking photographs, but he knows that he can control women. He knows he can get them to do what he wants them to do. And this sets a really dangerous precedent.
The girl didn't report Brudos to the police, which only spurred him on further. 8 months later, he escalated the intensity of his attacks.
He persuades a 17-year-old girl to get into his car. On the pretext of giving her a lift home. He doesn't give her a lift home. He takes her to a remote spot and beats her, assaults her brutally because she refuses to take off all her clothes for him and let him photograph her.
This is somebody who's been fantasizing about the control that he has over women. This is somebody who's been able to get women to do what he wants before. And now he's got somebody who is not playing ball and he doesn't like it. So this violent reaction, it's not a particularly surprising one to me.
This time, Brudos didn't get away with it. A couple overheard the assault taking place and called the police. In the spring of 1956, instead of facing a prison sentence, Brudos was committed to Oregon State Hospital for psychiatric evaluation.
It's concluded that he's having what might be described as an aberrant adolescence, sexual deviation with fetishism. It's also suggested that there may be an element of schizophrenia in his condition.
It was mentioned at the time that he couldn't be rehabilitated, that he had a sociopathic issue that couldn't be rehabilitated.
But what you have now is the beginnings of a full-scale sexual predator. if you like, the genesis from the cocoon is beginning to emerge.
Brudos spent his days at school and his nights in the hospital. Despite the report suggesting he could not be rehabilitated, the 17-year-old was released after just 9 months in December 1956.
After he left school, Brudos, he did do a short stint in the military, but then he became a commercial electrician and began to do wiring jobs.
By 1963, the 24-year-old was working for a local radio station in Corvallis, Oregon. It was there he met his wife, 17-year-old Darcy.
They begin a relationship, get married, and have the first child. But Brudos hasn't really changed. What he wants Darcy to do is to do all the housework naked, or only wearing underwear, or only wearing a pair of high heel shoes.
And that is typical of an abusive situation. It's typical.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90 exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
Call of coercive control. He's got this much younger woman who is completely kind of under his command. And when he orders her to walk around naked at home or wearing lingerie, she does it. Because I think he has got such kind of influence over her in this relationship.
By 1967, the couple had welcomed a second child into the world, and Darcy had refused to continue dressing up for her husband. Jerry Brudos would have to go looking for his thrills elsewhere.
In May 1967, he's been stalking a woman, and he breaks into a house when she's asleep. Now, he's really there to steal her underwear, but sadly, she wakes up while he's in the midst of stealing, and he attacks her, rapes her, and flees. It's the action of a man who has lost control of his own capacities. On the surface, hardworking family man, underneath a cauldron of sexual desire, of fetish, of the desire to hurt women.
In April 1969, Oregon State Police were searching for four missing young women who'd vanished over a 15-month period. The latest girl to go missing was secretary and part-time student Linda Sali. Becky New was just 10 years old when her big sister disappeared.
She was 22, and she was like a second mom, babysat me. Took me to Mary Poppins, you know, that kind of stuff. Of course, we had our moments. I was kind of a brat, but she was always good to me.
On the 23rd of April, 1969, Linda headed out to a shopping mall in Portland.
The last time I saw my sister, Linda, she was going to Lloyd Center. and get a birthday present for her boyfriend or fiance. And that's all I remember. And she didn't come back.
Linda Sarli didn't arrive at her boyfriend's birthday party or for work the following day. Her worried parents dialed 911.
As far as I know, they called the police as soon as they could. I, that night, had a dream that she was in a meadow. And she was happy. And I kept having that dream over and over. And it's just weird. She just disappeared.
Linda had become the fourth girl to go missing in the Portland area in just over a year.
I think people were terrorized at the time because they knew that there was somebody taking young women off the street in positions where it's not somebody who goes to a remote area late at night and is involved in some other activity that might put them greatly at risk. These were women from the community who were just going about their daily lives.
On the 10th of May, 1969, 17 days after Linda's disappearance, authorities were alerted when two fishermen made a grisly discovery in the Long Tom River.
The first news that we heard was when they found a body in the river, and then we kind of was wondering if it was her, and turned out it was.
The police didn't know it yet, but Linda's killer was a 30-year-old local electrician named Jerry Brudos. On the 23rd of April, Linda Sarli had been walking back to her car at the Lloyd Center shopping mall with her arms filled with birthday presents for her boyfriend. Brudos approached the 22-year-old, claiming to be a security officer. He accused Linda of shoplifting, sat her down in his car and drove her away.
Linda is taken back to the garage, the killing ground. But Brudos doesn't immediately kill her. He keeps her in the garage and goes to have supper with his family and then returns to the garage and strangles her.
Saving money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP lawn and garden and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big money at Menards.
I think that process of switching from murderer to family man eating dinner and then back again is one that many of us struggle to understand, because when we hurt other people, we feel bad about it. We feel guilty. But Brudos doesn't. He doesn't have that conscience. He doesn't have that empathy. He is literally able to just put one part of his life down and go and see to another one. So it is very chilling. It is very, very difficult to comprehend, but that's what's going on here.
Brudos had been abducting and killing women for 15 months. Linda Sarli had become his fourth victim.
First, he tied her up and kept her for a while, and she happened to get away, or almost got out of her restraints. And he happened to come back into the garage and caught her, and she fought like hell, but it wasn't enough. She was like my height, and he's like 6 foot, so it wasn't much of a... I mean, she tried. She tried like heck, but it didn't. I wish it had.
Brudos strangled Linda with the strap of a postal bag and raped the 22-year-old as she lay dying. The 30-year-old shoe fetishist had taken his obsession to deadly extremes.
She crossed his path, he saw shoes, and he has to have her. And that was his modus operandi.
Linda Sarli's post-mortem revealed that not only had she been strangled by the killer, but her lifeless body had been experimented on.
After he killed Linda, he violates her body in a whole new way. So he puts hypodermic syringes at the sides of her ribs and attaches electrical nodes to them and tries to get her body kind of reanimated, essentially. This doesn't work, it fails. All that happens is that he burns her skin. But for me, this says that Brudos is an offender who will constantly be trying to improve and refine his offences. And he's an incredibly dangerous man at this point.
Linda's murder still affects her family over 50 years on.
My mom, she never got over it. Never. And she used to call me Linda once in a while by accident, and she missed her. I can't talk about it much without crying, even after all these years. You took my sister away from me. I had no sister anymore. That was hard. That was really hard.
Jerry Brudos had begun his murderous career 15 months earlier in January 1968, when an encyclopedia saleswoman turned up at the former home of the dangerous predator in Portland.
Linda Slauson knocks on the door of Jerry Brudos. Perfectly conventional family scene. His mother's there and the two children. His wife Darcy is out at work. And on his front doorstep presents a 19-year-old. Well, I don't think Jerry Brudos could believe his good luck.
Brudos feigned an interest in the encyclopedias and invited Linda into the basement of his house.
There must have been a moment in which Linda thought to herself, this is very strange. But without warning, he hits her over the head with a plank, making her unconscious. Then he strangles her. Remember, he can hear the footsteps of his children above him. He strangled a woman he's never met before in the basement of his own house.
Brudos spent hours dressing and undressing Linda's body. By 2 a.m., he realized he would have to dispose of her, but wanted to keep a memento of his first kill. The perverted shoe fetishist decided to saw off her foot.
He wanted that foot to be kept because he couldn't keep the whole body, but he would keep the foot in a freezer, and that allowed him to relive the sexual fantasy of seeing this woman's foot in a shoe, even though for any normal person, seeing a severed, amputated foot would be disgusting on its face. For Jerry Brudos, this was a sexual fantasy of his. This was something that couldn't fight back against him.
Brudos tied the rest of Linda's body to an engine head and threw it into the Willamette River. 10 months later, he would claim a second victim. In November 1968, Brudos drove past a broken-down vehicle. 22-year-old Jan Whitney had been driving to the University of Oregon 3 days before Thanksgiving.
Why don't you come with me? You know, I'll just pop into the house and I'll come straight back to the car and fix it up and away you'll go, be fine. Well, why would Jan think that particularly worrying? He was upright enough kind of character. He didn't have a hook or a claw, or he didn't wear a devil's mask. He was just an ordinary bloke in Oregon.
And he was able to, while she was in the car, he got into the back seat and put that strap over her neck from behind and then closed the ends of the strap into the rear door. And then in his home, he took her into his garage and then also had sex with her. He's a necrophiliac, intercourse with the dead.
And it really is like a cat with a mouse. It's as if he's playing with the body of this poor dead young woman.
For days, Brudos left Jan Whitney hanging in the garage workshop of his new family home in Salem, Oregon, regularly changing her clothes and defiling her body.
It is like an element of fiction. This out of the blue, sudden killing. Why should you expect it? Innocent young woman driving to the University of Oregon. You don't expect to come across somebody who's going to strangle you in the front of the car. But of course, that's not Brutus's point, really. Brutus's point is the body. It's the body that he wants.
Brudos removed Jan's breast before weighing her body down and dumping her in the Willamette River. She would not be discovered until 8 months later in July 1969. The killer then towed Jan's car away from his home.
He's not going to leave her car at the side of the road. So once he's had his way with the body, he goes back and moves the car from the side of the road to a service station so that nobody's going to miss it. Indeed, he locks it up. Brudos is covering his tracks.
In just 10 months, Jerry Brudos had taken the lives of two women. But his lust for high heels and murder was about to intensify even further. The 30-year-old shoe fetishist had killed Linda Slauson and Jan Whitney in 1968. And by March 1969, he was ready to strike again.
He comes across a 19-year-old, Karen Sprinker, in the car park of Oregon State University. He has a pistol and he abducts her, forces her into his car at gunpoint.
Brudos kept Karen detained in the garage workshop of the family home in Salem that he shared with his wife and two children. He raped the college freshman before reaching for his camera.
There's pictures that he took of her, and she's standing in the nude in his garage, and she has a look of somewhat of approval on her face, and that's called fear paralysis. In other words, she knew she was in trouble. He told me that she did everything that she could. Don't shoot me. Please don't shoot me.
Brudos put a rope around Karen's neck and hanged her until she was dead, but not before he took pleasure in seeing her struggle.
He had an eye hook. An eye hook is like a round device in the ceiling that screws into the ceiling, and the cable would go into that. The hook would go into that and hang down, and then he would put that around their neck and then jack it up, and he would ask her, is that okay? Does that hurt? Does that hurt? And he got off on the fact that her heels, those high heel shoes, were kicking the side in the back of his wall. He smiled when he talked about it. Women to him are expendable. Women to him are no more than a piece of gum that you're tired of and you throw away.
After sexually violating Karen's lifeless body, Brudos continued to defile her.
Karen Sprinker's breasts were cut off. And they were cut off so that he could make a mold. These individuals, serial murderers, like to keep souvenirs. And it was not about the sex, it's just like keeping something to remember by. See, keeping something so that he can relive this again until the next victim.
This is a man utterly out of control, fulfilling every dark fantasy that he ever had. He's mutilating a young woman, he's abducted, killed, and he's using her body as though it were a toy, a plaything. It's very hard to imagine a worse kind of depravity than that.
After taking the life of Karen Sprinker, Brudos didn't wait long before hunting for his next victim. On the 21st of April 1969, 24-year-old Secretary Sharon Wood was on her usual Monday morning trip to work.
So it was a beautiful spring day. It was one of those days in April, a rare Portland day where you didn't need a coat. And I had dropped my children off at the sitter. And then I went to work, and I worked all day. And when I couldn't find my keys after a day of work, I asked my work-study student, Alex, if he could just cover for me. I was going to run down to that garage and see maybe I'd left my keys in the car.
Not only could Sharon not find her car keys, she'd forgotten whereabouts she'd parked.
So here I am, not knowing for sure where I'm going because I can't remember what floor I'm supposed to be on. as I'm changing my mind about, oh, I'm down here. No, I'm upstairs. No, I'm down here. No, I'm upstairs. So I'm turning. My body's turning. And suddenly I realize there's somebody behind me, and they're turning every time I turn. I haven't seen this person. I just feel this presence. And then I feel a tap on my shoulder. And what I remember is him saying, ma'am. And he said something like, you too, like he's lost too. So I was off like a shot. I'm like, I'm going for the daylight. And then he pulled a gun and pointed the gun at me and said, if you don't scream, I won't shoot you.
Despite the order to comply, Sharon's instincts were to stand up to Jerry Brudos.
I just started screaming. I started backing up. He came at me. And then he got his arm around my neck, and somehow his thumb got in my mouth, and I bit down so hard. And then I didn't even know I had what you call fear paralysis. That's when your jaw locks and you just can't move. And he's much bigger than I am. I always call him an army tank of a man. He was kind of scary looking. But there we were, and I am biting and I cannot let go. And we are going around and around and around.
As the tussle continued, the sound of a nearby car starting and a flash of headlights startled both Sharon and Brudos.
He grabbed my hair. I had very long hair. And he pulled me backwards, and he beat my head against the concrete until my jaw would relax, because it would not relax. That was it. He jumped up, ran off, and then I'm laying there dazed. And then he comes back to retrieve his gun. And when he comes back, I think, oh no, he's going to shoot me.
But luckily for the 24-year-old, Brudos grabbed his gun and ran. Sharon was left completely stunned.
I felt like I'd just been hit by a tsunami. It was over very quickly. I had no idea what had happened to me. I assumed I was dead, and I just was so sad. I'm never going to see my children again. But you don't really have time to think about it. It's like throwing a match on kerosene. You know, it just goes off, and you're there, and you're fighting the fire to save your life. You have no other feelings or no other thoughts but surviving.
Just 2 days after the attack on Sharon Wood, Jerry Brudos murdered his fourth victim, Linda Sarley. The 30-year-old electrician had perfected his method of hiding bodies by tying them to heavy engine parts before throwing them into local rivers.
Those seemed to be his favorite dumping sites because he knew that if he took a body to a river and could make it stay underwater for a period of time, maybe not indefinitely, but for a period of time, that it would be very difficult for that body to be discovered.
On the 12th of May, 1969, just 48 hours after Linda Sarley had been discovered, divers searching for evidence in the Long Tom River found the body of Karen Sprinker. Detectives decided to question students in Callahan Hall at the University of Oregon, where Karen had been living. It just so happened at the same time Jerry Brudos had changed his MO.
Brudos is becoming incredibly bold, incredibly confident in his offending at this point in time. So he starts phoning up the dorm rooms of a local university and asking to speak to a woman of a particular name. And he just makes the name up. But he knows that this is going to be a way of actually getting to talk to young women. And when he does this, he asks them out on dates.
One student agreed to go for a drink with Brudos, but she'd remember the date for all the wrong reasons.
When he's in the car with her and they're driving, he says, well, how did you know that I wouldn't murder you and dump you in the river? And she was really taken aback by this because, You know, people can make those kind of comments. How did you know that you could trust me? But this was incredibly specific. And I think it was that specificity that called her to contact the police.
The girl arranged a second date, but when Brudos arrived, it was the police who were waiting for him. Detectives questioned the 30-year-old electrician. They had no reason to arrest him, but decided to keep Brudos under surveillance. Armed with a photograph of Brudos, detectives went to visit women who'd been attacked over the past 15 months in the Portland area. One of those was 24-year-old Sharon Wood.
So they came out to my mother's house and they had, I guess you'd call them mugshots. So I was looking through the book and so I was able to identify him in that book.
Sharon wasn't the only person to identify Brudos, a 15-year-old girl who'd been attacked on the 22nd of April 1969, the day after Sharon and the day before Linda Sarley's murder, also picked him out.
He is very distinctive looking. He had the sandy, really short hair, what I call ice blue eyes, and these kind of really heavy-lidded little eyes. But he was a regular guy. He was an electrician. He was married. He had two kids. I mean, who knew?
On the 30th of May 1969, detectives made the decision to arrest Jerry Brudos. But when they tracked him down to the home of a friend in Corvallis, Oregon, he and his entire family were nowhere to be found. Investigators were going to charge him with assault, but they were certain he was also responsible for at least two murders, Karen Sprinker and Linda Sarley, whose bodies had been found in the Long Tom River.
Number one, they are all tied the same way. Number two, they all had engine parts attached to their bodies. And number three, there were parts on the body that led back to Brudos' home. So all of that indicated that this is the act of one person. The odds of it being two people doing the same kind of thing doesn't fit. It's like a fingerprint, you know? This is the work of one individual.
When the police finally intercepted Brudos' car, his wife Darcy was behind the wheel with her two children next to her. The 30-year-old killer was hiding under a sheet in the back. After 3 days of questioning, Brudos finally told detectives in gruesome detail how he'd killed three women in the workshop of his family home and one in the basement of his previous home.
And on the 3rd of June, 1969, Brudos confesses to the killings. He could hardly not, because to be honest, he knew that once the police searched his house and his garage, there was no going back.
And this is because he is proud of what he's done. He's committed all of these murders, he's caused so much harm, so much trauma, and he wants credit for it. But we have to be really cautious because he's telling a story. He's telling a story that he wants other people to hear. So it won't be 100% truthful. There will be elements that we will never know in terms of what these victims experienced, but this was the narrative that he wanted to stick.
During the confession, Brudos also admitted to the attempted abductions of Sharon Wood and a 15-year-old girl. Detectives began a search of his home.
Once he was arrested, items were found in his residence, such as the car keys and the apartment key that belonged to Whitney. What was he doing in possession of something of somebody he never knew or never had contact with?
The car key fit the lock of Jan Whitney's car that Brudos had abandoned after killing her 7 months previously. Investigators also searched the 30-year-old's workshop, the area of his Salem home that had been turned into his kill room.
Numerous photographs were found that fell back behind a workbench because he's trying to hide all of this stuff. In one of the photographs itself was the one of Karen Sprinker, where she's in the nude. A very beautiful young girl. Her hair was long, she's very lithe, and she has on high heel shoes, and she's standing there with a look like, whatever, it's blank.
Police unearthed piles of ladies' underwear, and in Brudos' attic, they found 40 pairs of high-heeled shoes. Amongst the pictures in his workshop was one that chillingly revealed the killer's face.
He could look into the mirror, and then he could see the reflection from her groin area, or vaginal area, into the mirror. So he took a picture of it. Well, he also took a picture of himself. So you can actually see it's actually Jerry Brudos. And that photograph was big as far as a piece of evidence.
I think Jerome Brudos took those pictures because it aroused him. And I think that having tortured a woman, he wanted to be able to go back and relive the torture, even though to camouflage his murders, he had to dispose of the body parts and dispose of these young women in the most horrific way. But having those photos allowed him to go back and look at the photos and relive the experience of torturing these women.
In June 1969, Jerry Brudos was arraigned for the murders of Jan Whitney, Karen Sprinker, and Linda Sarley. Despite his confession, there was not enough evidence to charge him with the killing of his first victim, Linda Slauson. Her body has never been found.
Brudos' initial plea was not guilty by reason of insanity. And I think this is quite a sophisticated thing that he does. I think he has that understanding of his own deviance, of his own perversions. He knows that people are going to look at his crimes and go, this guy's bonkers, he's crazy. So I think this is an attempt to try and secure a good outcome for himself.
And then a little later, he changes his plea to guilty. Because I think that the evidence was so overwhelming that there was little else that he could do.
On the 27th of June 1969, Jerry Brudos was given 3 life sentences. He would never be free again. 23 years later, in 1992, radio reporter Lars Larson was given the opportunity to interview the 53-year-old killer.
They put us in a small room with a desk in it that was used as an overflow office, and they said, okay, go ahead, do the interview. So we were face-to-face with him for a little over 2 hours, and it was creepy, very, very creepy.
Lars found Brudos to be unremarkable, yet extremely callous.
And the funny thing is, if you had passed him on the street, he had a big round face, and he was kind of a heavy-set guy, but he's a big, powerful guy, but he would have struck you as just Joe Average, just an average-looking guy, nothing really all that distinguishing about him. But his affect was very strange. He would laugh about things that were completely inappropriate. He's talking about murdering, dismembering, and then dumping the bodies of young women attached to a piece of iron into a river to...
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time, it's subject to change. Max 1 offer per account.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
Rot like a piece of garbage. And while he's talking about this, he's laughing about things.
He loves talking about his cases. but he's also crafty enough to hide some that he may not want to talk about. That may be, for him, even over the top. In my personal opinion, I have no facts or basis to know that he has other victims, but I know he tried others, and there may be some, maybe.
Brudos was twice refused parole in 1977 and 1999, much to the relief of the people whose lives he ruined.
I got mad when I got older. I was in junior high. We had prisoners from the Oregon State Penitentiary come and talk to the kids. I asked, do you know Jerome Henry Brudos? And they said, yeah, why? And I go, because he killed my sister. And you tell him he'll never get out of prison alive. It just came out. And I couldn't hold it in anymore. And I figured that's the closest I'm going to get to being able to talk to him. And so I did.
My hope in talking about this is that somebody somewhere just might hear how important it is to be aware of your circumstances. And I'm still very sad about it. Very sad that there are the parents of those girls who will never get to be grandparents. I have 11 grandchildren and a great-grandson. And that would never be the experience of those young women's family. They didn't get to have those things.
Jerry Brudos became the longest-serving inmate in the state of Oregon. He spent 37 years in prison before he died of liver cancer in March 2006 at the age of 67. Those who had the opportunity to speak to him never saw any signs of redemption.
I asked Brudos about the remorse that he had for the victims, and he had no remorse whatsoever. They were expendable to him.
Brudos hated women. To make them feel terrified while they were still alive, to take their life, and then to take parts of them off, and then to keep them as sexual trophies. He clearly hated women with a passion, but it also sexually excited him that he could hurt women.
Brudos was a sexual predator who preyed not only on the women who happened to cross his path, but on the shoes they wore. His fetishism spiraled out of control and led to the most horrific murders. To kill four young women and gruesomely desecrate their bodies for no other reason than his own self-gratification makes Jerry Brudos one of the world's most evil killers.